Hello, and welcome to Eyes on Success, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpey and Peter Torpey.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. On last week's show, we talked with Robbie Sandberg about some test results his organization put together comparing tablets and how they are used and how effectively they can be used by partially sighted individuals. This week, we're going to talk with Robbie about some more test results that their organization acquired, about comparing different tablets and how they can be used by people with no vision.
We'll talk about how the information pool for computer technology aimed at blind and partially sighted people, otherwise known as NCABs, does their testing, and about the test results they've gotten that might be able to help you choose the tablet that's right for you. But first, for our tip of the week, this week's tip comes from Robbie Sandberg.
I always say that Android is something for blind people who are looking for a technological challenge, you know, people who want to solve things and, beat the demands of technology. For them, that might be the right thing. But for someone who really wants to use it as a tool, an iOS device would be better.
Well, and as I've said a number of times on this show, we've interviewed lots of people in the past about Android devices versus iPhone devices. And before I got my first smartphone, much as I wanted to get an Android device, because I like the idea of open architectures and it appeals to sort of the geeky side of me, I just wanted something that worked. And I didn't want to have to fuss with it. So I finally got an iPhone and, you know, I'm delighted with it. It is incredibly accessible.
I totally agree. I mean, the geek is the right word. I mean, for geeks who have the time as well as the inclination to solve technical problems and get the hang of things, then, you know, be my guest. But for someone who is not a geek, who wants just a tool that works well, and especially if it's for occasional purposes, work purposes, then you have to recommend an iDevice for blind people.
That gives you a little preview of what we'll be talking about later on. But, you know, as Robbie points out, there are lots of tablets available these days. There are a lot of different options, and choosing the right one to suit your particular needs can be sometimes tricky. You don't get to see all of these devices. You don't get to compare them side by side very often. And so it's nice that organizations like his are doing these tests for us, and we can do some of the comparisons offline before we actually purchase one of these devices.
And just to make something clear that Robbie will say later in the show, all of these tests are done on the devices as received out of the box. And there are some very sophisticated screen readers available for Windows devices, but these tests assume you're not using one of those. Let's start by re-meeting Robbie Sandberg and learning a bit about NCABs.
Okay, good to talk to you again. This is Robbie Sandberg from Hamburg in Germany, and I work with a project called NCABs, I-N-C-O-B-S, which is a German acronym, which roughly translates as Information Pool for Computer Technology Aimed at Blind and Partially Sighted People.
Now, for more detailed information about NCABs and their parent company, Dias, you can either listen to Robbie's description in last week's show or go to the links in the show notes for either this week or last week. But just to give you a very quick summary from their website, it says, NCABs informs about mainstream technologies for blind and low vision users. We test and evaluate smartphones, tablets, and apps, and report about new assistive technologies and devices. And the parent company, Dias, says that they support the integration of disabled and elderly people. Key activities of our projects are accessibility, assistive technology, and the development of information services to disabled relevant topics.
And just as a quick reminder, in this show, we'll be focusing on tablet comparisons for use by the blind. In last week's show, we focused on tablet comparisons for use by people with some vision.
And also, just in case you're concerned about what language these websites are in, although these are German companies, you can click on English and get the same information in very well-written English. So that's not a concern.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. Success, 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 success.
This week's focus topic is the testing InCobs does on the usability of tablet devices by blind people. Last week, we talked about testing that you had done on tablets for people with low vision who presumably used mostly magnification. This week, we wanted to talk about the testing you've done for blind people who use primarily speech output. Can you give a brief overview of those tests?
So what we do is we test basically in two stages. One test is what we call an expert test. So we ourselves, who are pretty well versed in using these devices, test them as to, you know, fulfilling basic tasks that we defined beforehand. And then the other stage is where we invite people who are mainly beginners, so don't have a lot of knowledge about the use of these operating systems. And then we ask them to fulfill predefined tasks, such as unlock the screen by entering a password, send a mail, add a contact, add a calendar appointment. And then we watch how they're doing it and how well they're able to do it. We ask them themselves about their experience and all the while document, you know, where the problems are, what particular function works well and which doesn't. And then these results all flow into the test result on the website.
As with the low vision user test that we discussed last week, I assume that you tested Windows, Android operating systems, and Apple iOS operating systems on a range of tablet devices. And I'm wondering what devices you considered.
That's correct. Well, I can tell you the devices we considered, they were, in this case, tablet PCs. I can give you the names, although the devices themselves are not really that informative. What really is decisive in these matters is the operating system. But we used, for instance, a Samsung Galaxy. We used a Sony Xperia and an Asus MemoPad, all of them running Android 4.2.2, although in the case of Sony, they use their own skin. So again, it's kind of different from the out-of-the-box system that the others use. And then we had the Surface Pro running Windows 8.1 and an iPad running iOS 7.
In general, what was your overall impression of which operating system did the best with their built-in speech accessibility?
As opposed to the findings regarding the low vision users, where, you know, it's the result is much more diverse, with blind users, you can pretty well say that iOS is the most advanced system, the most easy to use, and with the most thought-through screen reader, which is VoiceOver in iOS case.
What facets of VoiceOver make you think it's so much better than the others?
Maybe not start with VoiceOver itself or with comparing the screen readers, but with how well it interacts with the operating systems. So, for instance, in Android devices, you often find that controls within apps are not labeled, or they're certainly not labeled so that a screen reader can make any use of them. You know this probably with using JAWS on inaccessible websites. So you basically, the sighted person sees a graphic and knows what a control is for, or the label is somewhere in the vicinity, but it's not linked within the program code to the control itself. So VoiceOver or TalkBack in that case, in Android case, you know, doesn't say anything. So you basically can't use the app unless you kind of know that the second control from the right is the one to save or something like that. So in iOS apps, this also does happen, but much more rarely. And also all the standard apps which come with the operating system are fully accessible, meaning that every control is labeled, the structure of the screen is easily understandable. You can use the VoiceOver gestures to go from the left top to the right-hand bottom, whereas with Android apps, it's often not that well structured. The screen is divided so that you can't use gestures to go from top to bottom, which means that you, sometimes you don't find a particular control if you don't explore the screen with your finger and so forth. So that makes Android a lot more annoying and cumbersome to use.
We actually run into an issue because I'm sighted and Pete's blind. He uses the speech output, and so he knows what all of these functional buttons have been labeled as. All I know is what it looks like. And so he'll sometimes ask me, well, how do I find the such and such button, or where is it? And I have no idea what he's talking about, because what it's officially labeled isn't so obvious from what it looks like. Is that something that's more prevalent in some of the operating systems than the others?
Well, that's an interesting thing you just said there. I mean, to be honest, I don't know, because this is something I haven't really paid any attention to, because what you've described is basically reverse inaccessibility. So they have labeled controls and elements of a screen correctly for the speech output user, but they've put graphics for sighted people, thinking that anyone looking at them will understand what they mean. But this is an aspect that hasn't really occurred to me before.
It is interesting. I mean, she'll sometimes look at the screen and not know what a particular button or function does because she doesn't understand the icon. Whereas, as she said, with VoiceOver, I get a clear text description of what that icon is or button.
And it's not just me. Just the other day, we were helping a friend with his Windows laptop, and when the login screen came up, there was this little icon in the lower left corner, and he asked me what it was, because of course he didn't know. Well, neither did I. Sure enough, it turned out if you clicked on that, you got to the accessibility functions, but there was nothing about the design of that graphic that would have given you a hint that it had anything to do with accessibility.
Eventually, we figured it out, though.
I just had an extreme example of that this morning. Audio Boo just changed its name to Audio Boom, and in principle didn't change anything else except they give you all this great new functionality. So this morning I went to post this week's episode of Eyes on Success to our Audio Boom feed, and sure enough, they had changed the entire interface. And it turns out there used to be a button that said, upload a new audio clip or whatever it said. It was very explicit. I was searching all over the screen. I really was very nervous about clicking on this one thing. It was just a red dot, and I was worried I was going to delete everything. But that turned out to be the button to click in order to upload a new audio clip.
Well, that's an interesting observation. I mean, but that's really something to do with not with the operating system, but with the developers of an app, where they introduce a new button or a new look to a button, a new design, and they expect the user to somehow find out just by playing around with it what it's for. I mean, I think that's pretty poor usability. But when I was saying this earlier on about the accessibility of iOS, I was referring purely to apps built into the operating system. There are apps, of course, which you can download and are completely unusable for iOS 2, but the standard apps are completely accessible, and that's what makes iOS easy to use and easy to get to know by a blind person rather than Android. I always say that Android is something for blind people who are looking for a technological challenge. You know, people who want to solve things and, you know, beat the demands of technology. For them, that might be the right thing. But for someone who really wants to use it as a tool, an iOS device would be better.
Now, I've heard that some of the newer Android systems are getting a little bit better about having more uniform accessibility across their interfaces. But I suppose when you have third-party developers that aren't developing to any kind of standards, it can still be an issue, I guess.
Yes, I mean, on the whole, things are getting better, but it's still, you know, they've still got some way to go. For instance, a couple of months ago, we tested something on the Sony Xperia, which is a nice device, actually. I kind of liked it. But because Sony are using their own skin, it was completely unusable because the virtual keyboard that they built into it didn't give you any feedback, none at all. So for anything where you had to enter any, you know, text, like entering a password, sending a mail, sending a message, adding a contact, a calendar appointment, all of that was impossible to do starting with entering with unlocking the screen by entering the password. So that device was totally inaccessible. With the recent update, they've changed that, and the keyboard is now accessible. So, you know, there are improvements made here and there and continuing to be made, but they still have got a long way to go before they reach the sufficiency of iOS, I think.
Fortunately, people are getting more attuned to accessibility concerns. So we discussed a little bit the various Android systems, pros and cons, and the iOS Apple operating system a little bit. We haven't said anything about Microsoft. What did you find there?
Well, Narrator has come along quite nicely in the recent past. But there again, I mean, there are some issues with the labeling of controls, especially if you use the apps in Windows 8.1. I mean, some of them are kind of usable, but then of course Narrator is, reacts kind of sluggish. And I mean, for people who use Windows machines and who are probably used to using screen readers like JAWS or Window Eyes, they're used to getting much more information about the, what's on the screen, which control has the focus, the status bar and the title bar and so forth. And of course, Narrator is, I think it's quite promising, shall we say, what they've done to improve it. But they still need to do a lot more for a blind person to be able to pull this out of the box and use it in the workplace straight away.
Now, I know you're in general just testing the base systems here, but I'm thinking that sometimes Microsoft may be necessary because of someone's work environment to get along with colleagues, etc. And I'm wondering if you have any opinion or if you've done any tests comparing using a commercial or non-commercial screen reader on a Windows tablet and comparing that to an Apple iOS system.
Oh, well, I mean, if somebody were forced to use a Windows machine because of the work environment, I would suggest using a third-party screen reader like JAWS. Certainly, because, once you get into the web, once you work in Excel or try to, add tables and lists and stuff to Word, then, Narrator really doesn't help you anymore. So you would need a screen reader then. And sorry, what was the further question?
Oh, I was just wondering how you'd compare running a more robust screen reader on a Windows system versus iOS, which is otherwise very accessible.
Ah, well, now, personally, I use the iPhone for entering calendar appointments and for private use mostly. For work purposes, I use a Windows computer still. I mean, an Ultrabook running Windows 8.1 and JAWS. Because what with VoiceOver being very accessible and giving lots of information, it's just not as comfortable to work in. Just for example, you want to explore a website. Now with VoiceOver, that's completely possible. Of course, you can use the rotor to change to links, to change to headings, to change to paragraphs and so forth. But with a Windows machine using JAWS, you can just hit a particular key to execute that particular function. So it's much less time consuming. And that's just one of the reasons I think that I would still go for Windows machine using a good screen reader for really in-depth stuff regarding work. But of course, we're talking about a mobile device you need to be able to take notes on the go or to add calendar appointments and synchronize them with your office machine and so forth. So that's really what these devices are aimed at. Not to do any in-depth table calculation or database programming or something like that.
Right. So what you're saying is then for some applications, there's no replacement for a desktop or a laptop computer, and these mobile solutions really offer different applications.
Exactly. And of course, one thing we haven't touched on at all yet is the use for navigation, especially for blind people, that these things have. So if someone, is on the road a lot, wherever that person works, then they can use their mobile device for navigation, and they have it sort of available every time of the day to use it for all kinds of useful things. But when it comes to, as I said, table calculation or account keeping or writing official stuff on in text processing, then definitely you're better off with a Windows machine using a good screen reader.
A lot of the testing you've described to us so far, particularly for users that are totally blind, involves touch screens and touch gestures. And I'm wondering, I know iOS has quite an extensive keyboard set of utilities when you're using the device with Bluetooth keyboard. Have you tested any uses with keyboards with these mobile devices?
Well, only recently. I mean, I mentioned this test that we did, or are still in the process of doing, regarding note-taking apps. And we tested those, or I mean, I tested those with Bluetooth keyboards. And again, I have to say that the iOS system is more intuitive to use with the Bluetooth keyboard, provided you know which keys are which, because, of course, you can't just translate every keystroke from a Microsoft keyboard to an Apple keyboard. But if you know your keyboard, then it's more intuitive to use and more functional, shall we say, than Android, where sometimes it's very difficult to navigate through text, for instance, with only the keyboard.
So they don't have specific keyboard hotkeys that are useful for screen reader users on Android devices, I take it?
Well, not that I know of. I mean, of course, you can use the local context. There you can change, of course, to, for instance, which element you want to navigate through. So is it, you know, lines, words, or characters? And then you can use the keyboard to execute that. But I'm not aware of any keystrokes, especially, you know, designed to do that.
Okay. Because there are a whole slew of hotkeys specific to VoiceOver on the Apple system.
All of these screen readers use speech output, and presumably they all use different voices. Do you find that a user's preference of voice is a personal matter, or do you find that there are actually significant differences in how understandable the voices are?
I think that's a very individual thing. I mean, for instance, I use JAWS with Eloquence, which I find has the most clear diction and is the most easy to understand, whereas other people prefer female humanoid voices or even male humanoid voices. But you have these voices by, for instance, a cappella, which sound sort of humanoid, but because they're made up of samples, they sometimes, to me, sound less correct or less human even than a human would speak. And I mean, for me, Eloquence approaches the modulation of a human voice perfectly. So although you can hear that it's not a human, for me, it's most relaxing to listen to. But other people have different preferences. And I mean, I know a lot of people I'm teaching actually use these a cappella voices, for instance, because they find them more easy to listen to. And especially what I have found is with people who become blind later in life and have never experienced a synthetic voice as Eloquence, or even, you know, the ones that came before, they find voices like Eloquence absolutely revolting, and they only want to use these humanoid voices. So I think you can't really make a general statement about that at all.
Yeah, I think that's often true. It seems that people I know who have been blind, you know, maybe since birth or for a long time, they're used to Eloquence, and it's a little bit more of an electronic speech. But people who are more recently blind or just want to hear a speech synthesizer, they prefer the more human-like synthesizers. I think it's easier to listen to Eloquence sped up faster. It seems to be a little bit more crisp.
Yeah, that's correct. And I mean, as I said, I mean, for instance, I can almost proofread documents I've written or texts I've written just by listening to the voice of Eloquence, because it tells me when I've forgotten a comma or when I've maybe put a full stop rather than a question mark. And a lot of these humanoid voices aren't quite that perfect yet. So I prefer this, even if it sounds more electronic, but it also sounds more real at the same time for some reason.
Yeah, humans aren't as good when they're sped up.
Now for this week's final item, what InCobs has planned for future tests and how you can get further information, including the details of their test results. What tests does InCobs have planned for the future?
Oh, good question. Well, we've got this note-taking app test in the pipeline, which is a kind of a smallish test. We just basically compared the usability and the functionality of four note-taking apps. Then one thing we've got coming up is a test of navigation apps for Android, because we did last year, we did a test for navigation apps for iOS. And so this is coming along for Android now. That's just two of the things we've got in the pipeline.
Well, people should look for that. I assume all those older tests can be found on your website.
Oh, yeah, definitely, yeah. If you get to the website, if you just tab down to tests, or even, you know, first to English and then to tests, then you'll get the whole archive of tests from the most up-to-date one to the one when the site went online.
If people wanted to get the actual results of some of these tests and the specific information, where would they go?
Well, the web address is www.incobs, that's incobs.de. And there you can click on English and tests and you'll find them. It's a very well-structured website. So that's the way how to get there.
And can you give the URL for the parent organization as well?
Oh, that's www.dias.de.
And is there an email address where people can submit questions?
Yes, that would be info@incobs.de. That's if you want to submit questions or have any comments about the website in general or the project. If you want to leave a comment on any of the tests, then of course we have a commenting function on the website.
And although we neglected to capture this in Robbie's voice, they also have a Twitter feed, and you can follow them at Incobs, I-N-C-O-B-S.
As usual, we'll have all of that contact information and all of the links that Robbie referenced in our show notes associated with this show. And as I mentioned last week, the test results on their website are very clearly laid out in a lot of detail, and you should get a lot of use out of those.
That's it for show number 1449. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking about blind-friendly architecture. Chris Downey had been a practicing architect for about 20 years when he suddenly lost his vision. Well, he's still a practicing architect, but as a blind person, he is much more aware of how a blind person experiences a space. And he is using that knowledge along with his experience as an architect to design spaces that are easier for blind people to navigate and more pleasant to be in. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net or call us at 585-258-0333, and we'll try to address your question in an upcoming program.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman Torpey and Peter Torpey, and distributed by WXXI Reach Out Radio. For detailed information or a full archive of programs, visit www.eyesonsuccess.net. You can also follow us on Facebook and on audioboom.com at Eyes on Success, or Twitter at @_EyesOnSuccess. We hope you will join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Eyes on Success, and have a nice day.